We look forward to seeing you at 2 Days of Truth being presented by Beyond Labels. It's our fourth annual 2 Days of Truth Summit. This year's theme is Detox is for Everybody. We're bombarded by everything from chemtrails to EMFs to pesticides, herbicides, even toxic people. We're going to deal with all of these aspects at the 2 Days of Truth Summit coming up. Sina, give us the final information.
I'm really excited about this summit. I think this is going to be our best one yet. It's June 14th and 15th at Polyphase Farm. We have some fantastic speakers like Sayer G, the founder of Green Med Info, Dr. Leland Stillman, who's been featured by Wise Traditions lately, Hilda Labrador, affectionately known as Holistic Hilda, you and me, of course. We also have, for the first time ever, a kids and teens program. So now the adults can enjoy the adult side while they know that their kids and their teens are having fun while also being educated by Joel, myself, and Hilda. It's going to be a blast. And this year, what we're going to do is we're going to actually teach you ancient and modern techniques for how to detoxify the body, mind, and spirit. And we're going to help you put together a personalized plan, like an action plan that you can take home and start. As soon as you arrive home, you can implement this action plan and start your detoxing.
You know, listen, folks, Polyphase is only 8 hours from half of the U.S. population. Take a long weekend, come join us, and you'll rub shoulders with other like-minded people, find our tribe, and be encouraged. It's a lonely place out there lots of times, especially if you're a bit of a maverick. So come and spend time with other mavericks and get encouraged, inspired, and enthused about living a more healthy life.
So I love the topic for this year, detoxification. It is one of the most important topics that we could ever address at our health summit. Because as Joel mentioned, everyone, every single person needs to know how to detoxify their body, mind, and spirit in order to achieve optimal health and wellness. Even though this pesticide is not really talked about, even in our circles, there's a new study that found that this chloramaquat pesticide was present in 4 out of every 5 people. In other words, 80% of people who were tested in America. Okay, wow. 80%. Yeah, 80% of those who were tested had chloramaquat in their urine. Also, the study tested different foods, predominantly oat-based foods and wheat-based foods. And they found the pesticide present on those foods. And we'll get into the details of that in just a moment. This study has sparked headlines, as you can imagine. Headlines such as this one: pesticide linked to reproductive issues found in Cheerios, Quaker Oats, and other oat-based foods. Right? Now the fact that there's another chemical on the market in our food supply wasn't actually groundbreaking news for me, right? We're routinely, it seems like, finding more and more chemicals showing up in our food and our water supply. What was interesting about this one to me was, as I mentioned, it's already on food and in 80% of Americans who were tested, okay? But get this, chloramaquat is not allowed to be applied to food grown in the U.S., right? So we can't actually use it on food grown in the U.S. It's actually only allowed in the U.S. on ornamental plants. So how did this chloramaquat get on our food, and how did it become so prevalent in the human body that it's showing up in 80% of Americans that are tested? Okay, so this, what to me was the interesting part. What I found out was that in 2018, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, began to allow imported foods, primarily grains, to be treated with chloramaquat, right? So at the same time that our governments were saying our farmers can't put it on our food, the EPA decided in 2018 that imported foods could have chloramaquat, okay? Now, the way that the EPA went about doing this was they essentially published a list of acceptable food tolerance levels for chloramaquat chloride. So they basically just said, here's the acceptable levels of chloramaquat that are going to be allowed on imported oats, wheat, barley, and some animal products. Okay. That publication essentially allowed the import of chloroquat, the introduction of chloroquat into our U.S. food supply.
Let me get this right. The EPA did this, not the FDA.
Yeah, because the EPA, so even though it's food, the EPA is the one that's in charge of chemicals that are applied to the food. So the EPA allowed the tolerance levels on the food. And so because the EPA said, oh, here you go, we put this online that now these are the tolerable levels, it opened the gateway to now companies being able to say like, oh, Canada grows, you know, some grain that has chloroquat applied to it. So now we can start importing from Canada. Okay.
Even though American farmers are prohibited from using it.
That's right. So then the story gets a little even more involved from here. Okay. That was in 2018. Now in 2020, the allowable levels were increased for oats. Okay. So they're increased for oats. Then in April of 2023, right? So this only just recently happened, right? Last year, the EPA proposed allowing in the U.S. for the first time ever, chloroquat to be used on barley, oats, wheat, and triticale grown in the U.S. So why? Why all of a sudden, right, first they allow these imports in 2018, then they raise the level that was allowed on the imports in 2020, and then in 2023, they're saying, oh, wait, now let's just use this chloroquat, right? Because remember, I already told you that there's studies showing that in animal models, at least, there's harm. So what it turns out is this proposal by the EPA to allow the first ever use of chloroquat on some of our food crops in the U.S., it was in response to an application that was submitted by the chloroquat manufacturer, Taminco. And I think I'm saying that right. Taminco. Taminco. So I actually looked at that application, and I'm going to include a link in the description box so everybody can look at it for themselves. It's 283 pages long. I actually went through this application to examine, okay, what changed? What changed in the research, for instance, that now all of a sudden this chemical could be allowed on our food? So what I found was in that application, the studies that were used to back this request to put this supply on this pesticide on our food supply, these studies are severely lacking, in my opinion. Many of these studies look at simply residue levels on the plant. Okay. Now, beyond looking at just the residue level on the plant, one study looked at residues in eggs coming from hens that were fed chloroquat treated feed. Okay. They reported that residue did appear at some of the dosages, but they were in the quote unquote acceptable range. Okay. And this, by the way, the acceptable range was also published in that document. And they got this from a joint FAO World Health Organization meeting on pesticide residues, right? So they're using this, they're adopting the codex levels. Okay. So basically they're petitioning the EPA saying, hey, why don't we allow this chemical, this pesticide in our food supply, and we'll just follow the codex's level, right? So one of the studies, as I just said, reported that residue did show up in the eggs, but it was within that acceptable range, the codex acceptable range. Now, there were also residues detected in the liver of those hens at every dose tested, right? But they said it didn't show up in the meat or the fat. Now, in cows, they also did a residue test, and residues were present in some of the meat, the fat, the liver, the kidney, and in the milk. So it crossed over into the milk. I did not see any human studies listed. Okay, these are just residue studies in animals given different dosages on Clomacot-treated foods. All of the studies that I read in this 283-page document, all of the studies were funded by the same industry producing the pesticide. Okay, so they were funded by the companies. At the end, the company concluded this, quote, there is the potential for secondary transfer of Clomacot chloride residues in ruminant meat and milk with the existing uses on grain cereals. Then they go on to say they recommend tolerances only on meat and meat byproducts, which will cover the liver and kidney tissues, right? So they conducted the study. They're saying that there is potential for secondary transfer of it in the meat and the milk. And they're saying basically just put these limits, the codex limits on it, and we should just approve it. Okay. Now, I want to highlight one thing before I go on to some of the study results. I do want to highlight, like Joel and I do often, this is not, we're not taking sides with a political side, okay? Because if you look at the timeline, the EPA, you know, in 2018, right? Who was president in 2018?
It was Trump.
It was Trump. So under Trump, they allowed imported foods to now, foods to be imported that had Clomacot on them, okay? Same in 2020. And then in April 2023, that was Biden's EPA that proposed allowing the first ever use of Clomacot on U.S. foods, U.S. crops. So this is another example of how these issues in our food supply that affect all of us, right? Pesticide is non-discriminate. It's going to affect all of us. And they span the political aisle, right? So this is another example, I think, of how we can't just rely on the politicians to change the food supply. It really has to come from we the people pushing back through the market largely, right? So don't be lulled into this false sense of security that your Republican or Democratic politician is going to fix this for you, because they're not, right? We see this happening under both sides of the aisle, okay?
Well, so the problem is that they essentially create enabling legislation to go to the agency. And at that point, their hands are off. You know, we did it. Those are the experts over there. Those guys, they're the experts, you know, go talk to them. We've washed our hands of responsibility and it's all good. But the problem with that is that it combines the executive, legislative, and judicial branch in one agency.
Yes.
And so the people that write the regulations, interpret the regulations, and enforce the regulations. And that's the very definition of tyranny.